Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your humble host. I'm Cal Fritzy. How you doing? All right, people, knock it off. People are placing bets on when I'm going to drop the F-bomb. I've got a surprise for you. For Fox's sake, knock it off. Go up into above the show notes. Look at the pics that I put in there, the slides that I put in there. Look at my brand new F-bomb slide, courtesy of Paul Alexander. Oh, and of course, I wanted to thank Egador for a slide in there, too, because if I have not offended you yet, please just hang on, and I will offend you shortly. This has been a public service announcement from yours truly. Okay. So what is going on tonight? A lot is going on tonight. As usual, there's always something going on tonight around here at the Red Fox Blogger. You saw the headline. Yeah, Islamic crucifixion. A few radio programs have touched on this, but not enough as far as I'm concerned. I've certainly not seen anything in the mainstream media. And once again, I want to thank Paul Alexander, who is the prolific blogger of Defender of Faith, Guardian of Truth. And I took this article from his blog. But I'm not seeing anything in the mainstream media. I'm not seeing anything on a lot of other counter-jihad radio programs. But, yeah, Syria, they found a new thing to do. Yep. They have found the new rage. Yeah, and it ain't twerking, people. The new rage now is murdering Christians or those against the militants in Syria and killing them and hanging them on crosses. Yeah, there were quite a few killed this week. Two of them in particular, though, they were strung up on crosses. This is an Al-Qaeda-linked Takfiri group that says it has publicly crucified two militants in northeastern Syria in retaliation for an earlier grenade attack on its members. Yeah. The terrorists, this Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, said the two were among a total of seven prisoners put to death in connection with a grenade attack in the Euphrates Valley city of Raqqa, and that was earlier in April. 10 days ago, attackers on a motorbike threw a grenade at an ISIL fighter at the Name Roundabout. A Muslim civilian had his leg blown off and a child was killed. Now, the London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights has published a photo of the two militants being crucified, with one of them being pictured with a banner which reads, "This man fought against Muslims and threw a grenade in this place." And again, if you go up above the show highlights and look at the slides, I have that photo right there for you. This is unreal. The SOHR said these crucifixions were not the first by the ISIL. Nothing that the Takfiris had crucified a man on April 16, in fact. So, you know, this is nothing new, what they're doing. As a matter of fact, in February, a Syrian girl was reportedly stoned to death for having opened a Facebook account after an ISIL-run court ruled membership to the social networking website carry the death penalty by stoning. This is foreign-sponsored. This is Tech Fury, these groups. And they have been behind many of the deadly bomb attacks targeting both civilians and government institutions across Syria over the past 3 years. And we know that Syria has been gripped in a state of deadly violence since 2011. But I just thought you would find that really interesting. And I'm going to put Paul Alexander's link in the chat room for you. And there you go. And, hey, I want to welcome people that are filing into my chat room. I think it's wonderful that you guys are taking time out of your otherwise busy day to spend with me. I want to thank, I'm just saying hello to people. I want to thank Agador, Bigfoot, Drake's Drum, Eric, Holger, Moving Forward, and Paul Alexander. You guys are fantastic. Thank you very much for being here. And, of course, we're talking about the latest fad within Islam. Let's kill the enemy of Islam. And let's put them on crosses. Because what are they? They're Christians. Out of this link from Paul Alexander's blog site, there is something here. I'm going to play it for you. I'm going to lower the volume. I'm just going to play it. If you go to that link I just put there in the chat room, just click on it, and you can follow the bouncing ball with me. This is only like 40 seconds long, but when you watch this, just look at what's going on and note what you see, okay? I'm going to click on it, and so here we go. The contents of the video could not be independently verified, but several sources had said it's come from a particular website and RNC. So here we go. We got a guy who is dead. He is strapped to a cross. Okay, the camera's panning over. Oh, we've got a bunch of Muslims. They're all smiling, and they're taking pictures. Oh, and there is a bus going by. The day in the life in Syria. Oh, back to the guy who is on the cross. Oh, more Muslims smiling and taking pictures. Oh, and the bus going by. A day in the life of the Islamic realm. There you go. See? Can you imagine? Paul says, I should have said fucking fantastic. No, Paul, we've changed our policy. Now it's foxing fantastic. Okay, what's the mark in the show? All right. Everybody, take a shot. But just watching that 40-second clip, though, believe me, it's just a day in the life. They hanged a guy. Well, they didn't hang him. They strapped him to a crucifix and put him in the city square. And people are just, you know, milling about. And they got their cameras out, their cell phones out, and they're snapping photos, and they're chatting back and forth. And you see the men, and, of course, you always see the shahids, the little boys. And they're all, you know, chatting away. Some are smiling, chatting back and forth like, hey, want to go for a coffee after this? And traffic is moving. Nothing's stopped. It's just another day in the life. Like, wow. This is unreal to me. But, yeah. Defender of faith, guardian of truth, please visit that blog by Paul Alexander. Now, I was speaking with my Monday co-host, Tim Burton, about this. And he had actually written an article about what is going on over there in Syria. He writes for the Brenner Brief, amongst other publications. He writes for Liberty GB, and he writes for New English Review. So he was there working this morning, working on his articles. A frantic message from Anna Marie Brenner saying, could you maybe talk about this? So he did. I really feel for that man some days, because his cup runneth over with the demands put on him. But he did. And I've got the PDF. It's not been published yet. But it's, it might have been by now. I got it this morning, so I bookmarked it. So maybe it's in the Brenner brief at this point. This is the Muslim brutality towards Christians and how it's increasing dramatically while the world looks the other way. Malula is not just any Syrian town. It has great significance to Christians. And that it's, you know, the Christians are being exploited again, of course. Oop, my apologies, sorry. Oops, sorry about that, folks. It just dropped on me, and I'm just trying to get it back. Sorry about that. There we are. I got it back. It does have great significance to Christians. And the Christian Post describes Malula as a small Christian town that contains several monasteries, churches, and cathedrals. It is considered historically important among Christians because it contains two of the country's oldest monasteries, Mar Sarkis and Mar Takla. The town has historically been a haven for Christians in the country and is one of three places where it is believed the language by Jesus, which was spoken by him. It was also spoken by Western Aramaic, and it is still used. And this is in Malula in Syria. So this is just not any ordinary town, folks. There is a very historical significance amongst Christians within Syria. But since the Syrian war began, the jihad against Christians and the religious minorities in Syria, the jihad that is inspired and propagated by the Islamic doctrine of warfare, which is, of course, as we know, eternally mandated against non-Muslims in the Quran, has been raging and devastating whole non-Muslim communities. It is savagely on an unimaginable scale. And Malula is just 56 kilometers northeast from Damascus, built into the rugged mountainside at an altitude of more than 1,500 meters, and it has suffered more than most. Wonder why? Would it be because it's a Christian community with historical significance? Now, there is a radical group out there, Jabhat al-Nusra. It's an opposition group. They have desecrated absolutely all shrines of the town during an assault in the last month of 2013. According to evidence of eyewitnesses who fled from Malula during the latest warfare in the region, members of Nusra tried to change the religious and architectural and historical look of the ancient Christian town entirely. Completely destroying some churches, the militants brought down all bells from other ones. The fate of two other world-famous monuments of Malula was no less tragic, because extremists blew out the statue of Christ the Savior, which had stood at the entrance of St. Fethwa Convent, my apologies, as well as the statue of the Most Holy Virgin Mary, who had stood close to the Saffir Hotel. Or is that pronounced Saffir? You know what? I have to apologize to you. This text is probably like the smallest text you can imagine. If you go to the chat room and click on the T and click on the font size and find the smallest text that you can put in the chat room, and that's what I'm reading. So yes, that would be the Saffir Hotel. Now, stories of atrocities abound. There were two young Christians, as I aforementioned. They were crucified for failing to convert to Islam. There are mass killings, summary executions, and beheadings. Even dismembering a girl with a mechanical saw while she was still alive. And that is all on record. And yet the world looks the other way. What is more, this is hardly an isolated story, because wherever Muslims have been in a position to do so, as a majority in any given area, they have inflicted unimaginable horrors on non-Muslims in general and Christian communities in particular. We know that. The so-called Arab Spring has unleashed the latent brutality that exists everywhere in the Muslim world. And although the pretext for violence and bloodshed may vary from one geographical location to another, there is one common thread that runs all the way through the narrative. The Islamic imperative to convert, subjugate, or slaughter all non-Muslims in the name of Allah is an imperative that has existed for 1,400 years and that has never gone away, quiescent only until such a time as the opportunity arises, as it has arisen now. We are at a juncture, people, where there is widespread condemnation from our religious leaders. Where is it? There is none. Apart from mouthing meaningless platitudes, the great and good within our Christian hierarchy have been definitely quiet on the issue, perhaps preferring not to undermine the achievement of the so-called interfaith outreach. Even Pope Francis has refused to speak out and condemn the Muslim persecution of Christians around the world, saying instead that authentic Islam and the proper reading of the Quran are opposed to every form of violence. Kidding me, really. So I want to thank Tim Burton for that. And I wish I could put that in the chat room for you all to enjoy, but like I say, it's in PDF format. If it's been published, I'll try to go to Brandon Brief and see if it's there by now. But ladies and gentlemen, I am really imploring you to pay attention to what's going on out there. This latest atrocity in Syria is just absolutely unbelievable. And I would like to thank somebody else who joined us in the chat room. And that's Sue from New Mexico, who is home. And Sue, it's great to hear from you. If I sound a little subdued tonight, there's a bit of a reason for that. I have been dealing with a very sick pet, and she's taken quite the turn for the worst. And I have her down here with me right now, and every 2 seconds, I'm glancing over my shoulder and looking at her sleeping on the big feather bed. So, I'm probably not even going to do the full 90 minutes tonight, but I felt obligated to bring this story to you because there are not enough people reporting on it. Imagine that, hanging, Christians on crosses, crucifixes. This is 2014. What kind of planet have we turned into in which we breathe the same air as these coranimals? How can you, in all consciousness, let this slip by and not feel the outrage? Some days I weep. I could do these shows 24/7. I could bring you the latest news. I could tell you what Islam was up to again today, but I think it'd be unfair to you because I don't want you going to bed with the nightmares that I do. This is my job. I'm the conveyor. I can only inform you what's going on out there, but I don't know if I want to inundate you, 7 days a week, 24/7. I can go to my Facebook page alone. I can go to my Infidels Are Watching Facebook page. I can go to Keep Islam Out of America, that Facebook page. And I can bring up a story and talk about that for 20 minutes, easy, without even researching it. Because I'm that good at what I do, which is unfortunate, because I do not want to be this good at it. I never expected that I would be so adept at bringing the issues of Islam to you, where I would have to share with you what Islam is and what's going on in the United States, in Canada, in the UK, and in Australia, in other places. But this is the reality of Islam. And I get a lot of flack from my friends, for example. I've actually lost friends. I have family members that won't speak with me anymore because they disagree with my involvement in discussing Islam. But you know why I do it? It's because I see the threat and you see the threat. It is empirical. It is true, and it's coming to us. We have not learned a damned thing since Muhammad came down from that goddamn mountain. And he said that Gabriel told me a few things. You know that by today's standards, he would be considered clinically insane, right? We know that. I wish Muhammad had met Dexter. You know? Okay, sorry. I'm getting myself thrown off target, and but if you're not familiar with that radio program, it's an American drama. It ran for 8 seasons, and Dexter is a character, and he is a serial killer, but he follows a doctrine in which he only goes after the worst of the worst. So every once in a while, people will see me in the chat room, and I'll be texting in, so-and-so needs to meet Dexter. And that's what I mean by that. And Muhammad should have met Dexter. Muhammad should have been on that table wrapped in cellophane, having a butcher knife plunged into his chest to rid the world further of evil. I say that a lot. I say that a lot about politicians. And everybody knows the politician in particular that I wish would meet Dexter. But I don't know if I want to say it out loud, but I don't think I need to, because I think everybody knows with whom I refer. Oh, his name starts with an O. Oh, hang on. And Vorpal Bite, you're currently in season 3 of Dexter? Oh, wait till you get to season 8. But where was I? Like I say, I am trying to deal with the home fires here right now, and I am trying to bring up articles. I'm trying to read the articles, and it's really annoying me because, believe me, I have never, ever seen such small print in my life. But I do have something here I want to share with you, and I'm going to bring it up. And as you know, Tim Burton is my Monday co-host on RFB. He is the radio officer for Liberty GB, and he is also my co-host on the Radio Jihad Network. In my travels, when I'm doing research for the shows, I come across things, and I came across this, and Tim and myself didn't see it until today. But we interviewed Wild Bill for America in February, and apparently the next day, Wild Bill put this together. So I'm going to play this for you right now.
I was on a show last night with Tim Burton, a British citizen who is learning about how Islam is using politically correct governments as a weapon to abuse their own citizens. Listen up, America. This could happen here. Tim is facing a possible 6 months in jail because he insulted a Muslim. He made no threat, used no profanity, nor did he make any false statement. What he did was send a tweet calling a radical Islamist a grievance-mongering taqiya artist. Well, Islamists have learned very well how to use politically correct government as weapons to hurt citizens. He called the British police, who obediently charged him with racially motivated harassment. As a former lawman, I am personally embarrassed by such despicable abuse. Those police officers have disgraced the badge of all civilized nations. If that Islamist had put Tim's tweet on his resume, the Muslim Brotherhood would probably offer him a job. Or Hillary Clinton would. But playing nice is not the way of Islam. The man saw a chance to hurt a British citizen and make the British government look like an anti-freedom puppet of Islam. Apparently, the spirit of Winston Churchill is long gone from England. Sounds to me that England needs a tea party so the citizens will have a renewed voice for freedom. Except instead of being taxed enough already, the British version would be taqiyed enough already. I told Tim that I would enjoy helping our British brethren set up a British tea party. Lord knows the British government is selling out their citizens even faster than the Obama administration is selling out Americans. It's only fitting that the citizens of both nations should join together to once again fight totalitarianism. The main difference is that today the threat comes from within our own governments. I've also heard from people in Australia, Canada, Norway, and Israel who want to see the Tea Party rise up in their countries as well. Why? Because the Tea Party of the USA is clearly the most powerful tool to defeat political foolishness. Just look at how agitated the career politicians are. The Tea Party is their number one target. That alone tells you how much they fear Tea Party power. Power that is multiplying day by day, and is about to begin replicating. This is Wild Bill for America. Thank you for watching, and America bless God again.
And that's funny. You heard the siren in the background as Wild Bill was closing out, and he kind of looks up and he's like, what is that? But I put a question on the YouTube site asking him, what show was that? It was my show. But you know what? It is what it is. All the same. It's just that I'm very proud that the word is getting out about the persecution of Christians, not only in Syria, as I discussed, but us in the West, people like Tim Burton and people like Paul Weston. Oh, yeah, Paul Weston was on a show, which was mentioned. Oh, a show. Oh, hello. Yeah, that was my show, too. Oh, gee, what am I, an unsung hero? But it is so important that we bring these issues to you, because you know what? It is sickening what I'm seeing globally. It's sickening. Christians being murdered for being Christians, being in prisons like Pastor Saeed Abedini. Westerners being taken to court via legal jihad. Muslims daring to come over here and think they're going to change our way of life. And they're capable of doing it because we allow it. We allow them to run for office. When they get into office, they are policy makers. And I mean political office. They change laws. They change policy. They change the educational system. And they get on board. And they set up front groups. Muslim Brotherhood front groups, like the Council of American Islamic Relations, which is a global entity. And they lobby our government. And they set up human rights tribunals. And they take people to task for doing nothing but telling the truth. People like Paul Weston, Tim Burton, and in Canada, Eric Bresseau, who did nothing more here in Canada, handing out flyers with passages from the Quran. And he was arrested. And he was convicted. He received a 15-month sentence in which he served 9 months in a prison. Because the Muslims didn't like what he had to say. Racially aggravated harassment. Paul Weston has to go back towards the court 2 days before the Euro elections, which will take place on May 22nd. He has to go back and be read the charges, where he and his magistrate his solicitor, I should say, They speak funny over there in England, and I'm picking up on it. I'm kidding. I screwed up. Where he and his solicitor will decide whether or not it goes to a magistrate court or a crown court. And what was Paul Weston doing? Quoting truth. And people like Tim Burton asking for his tax dollars back from the mendacious grievance-mongering techie artist known as Fayez Magal of Tell Mama, who fudged the books to get federal funding from the UK government. And when he was found out, Tim Burton said, I want my money back. Those are my tax dollars. And Fayez Magal had him arrested. And he was charged. He beat the rat, though. Paul Weston will, too. But what they're doing, what these Muslims, what they're doing, is that they are creating havoc within our lives, and they're costing us money. That's the legal jihad. These human rights tribunals set up. Civilizational jihad. They're growing positions of power within the higher echelons of our governments, i.e. Barack Hussein Obama's White House, the political jihad. I'm sick and tired of losing battles. And what we witnessed in Syria last week with those Christians strapped to 2x4s, i.e. crosses, crucifixes. How long do you think it'll be until it gets a little closer to home? Because it will. But you know what scares me even more? It's that when it reaches the West in such a magnitude, the buses will just go by. Oop, got to catch my bus. Nope, just another day in the life. And the bus will go by, and the passers-by, they'll show up with their cell phone cameras, and they'll chat and go back and forth, and they'll walk away. And that dead body will be there in the sun for maybe another 6-7 hours. Because, you know, the Muslims love to show off their handiwork. This makes me ill. You know, I said in the show notes, indeed, the scourge reaches below the bedrock and sinks to the magna. Seriously, we share the planet with them. And we do. We share the planet with these creatures. I called them Quranimals on Facebook. There was yet another atrocity, totally unrelated to what I'm discussing tonight. But I called them Quranimals. And Mike Holt of Restore Australia. Oh, and whose show you can hear right here on the Red Fox Blogger Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, because I produce it. But, you know, Mike Holt of a show. Gotten a lot of that, too. But, yeah, so I posted on a thread on Facebook. I said, these Quranimals, no limits. And Mike came back, and he said, Kel, will you please quit calling them Quranimals, because you're insulting animals. And we were at Jeff Mitchell's place earlier today, and that is the EDL radio show. And Paul Alexander put in the chat room that Agent Chowdhury, you know, try to pin him down. He's a snake. And so I said to Paul, don't insult snakes. But I don't know what the hell else to call them, for Fox's sake. What do we call them? Jeez. I can't even call them anything like Schmeagle that lives in swamps in the land of Mordor. And, of course, that's a reference from Lord of the Rings. I don't know what the... I don't know. Is there any comparison? Seriously? Like, we can't call them animals because we insult animals. We can't call them core animals. We're insulting animals. Yes, my cult. I hate attention. We can't... I don't know with which to compare them. We can't... Lucifer is more a man than a Muslim. Eric Kyle just called them monsters. The Borg. Drakes? I love that. The Borgs. Yeah, we'll call them. It's funny, Drakes, that you actually bring that up, because I was doing a blog a little while back, and I was actually doing a study on a passage from The Lord of the Rings and the second book out of the trilogy, Two Towers, and it's all the battle scenes in there and stuff like that. And I compared the Islamists to the Borgs, because that's what they are. They're Borgs. Good and evil. The Two Towers. Did I say the Twin Towers? You know what? If I did, I don't know. Like I say, I'm tired, and I got a sick pet behind me, and I really shouldn't even be doing this show tonight, but I booked it, and I'm doing it. But the Two Towers, with all the battles, the Borgs, that's what Islamists are. Oh, Agador said, no, I didn't. Oh, okay, thanks, because you know what? Jeez. It no matter. We are up against the wall. Now, if you read those books by J.R.R. Tolkien, a lot of people say that he was prescient, in that he understood that there was a threat to humankind. I always thought that he had Islam in mind. His son said no, he was just doing a generality on good versus evil. But when you read those books, and Paul, pass the bottle, Kel, mine's running out. Paul, I was going to ask you to pass yours because mine's running out. But when you read those books today, think about the threat that we're facing. I was interviewing Dr. Terry Jones. Holger asked a very important question in the chat room, which I related. What do you think is the biggest threat to the United States of America? Marxism or Islam? And Dr. Jones didn't even give it a second thought. He said, Islam. And I agreed. If we don't deal with Islam in the West, we're going to end up like what's going on in the UK. The UK, the sheer numbers of Islamists growing there is breathtaking. We're rapidly growing those numbers here. Canada has so far kind of in a roundabout way been a little lucky about it. But you know what? Canada and the United States, we're not too far behind if we don't heed what's happening over there. You listen to EDL Radio. You listen to Jeff Mitchell. You listen to what he's telling you. You listen to Tommy English. Tommy English does a weekly report on No Way 90s show at Reactionary Speaks Network every Saturday evening. He calls in, and he's giving a weekly report. Listen to what Tommy English is telling you. Jeff Mitchell, Tim Burton, Paul Weston, Eric Buckby, and Sofiero. Listen to these people from the UK. We are lazy. We are lazy. We're not paying attention. Enough attention. These people over there are literally fighting for their lives. And I mean literally. And some of them are dying. Theo Van Gogh. In the UK, Van Gogh is pronounced Van Gogh. We have people like Geert Wilders out of the Netherlands who speaks out about Islam and is shuttled from safe house to safe house. Do you want that in North America? No? All right then, get busy. I'm going to take a bit of a break because I do want to bring up another article. I've got a really pretty song here that I came across, and I'm not usually a top 40 type of radio listener, but I have this really lousy alarm clock, and it will only tune in one station, and it plays top 40 music. So I set my alarm, and I wake up to it. And I woke up this morning, and this song was on. And I was like, oh, what is this song? So I kind of languished a little bit listening to it. And I loved the lyrics because, you know what? This encompassed me. The lyrics spoke about my life. This is Kelly Clarkson, Catch My Breath. We'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes.
Be left behind. Distance was a friend of mine. Catching breath in a web of lies. I've spent most of my life riding with playing acrobats, shadow boxing the other half, learning how to react. I've spent most of my time catching my breath.
Welcome back, everybody. And, yeah, a bit of a girly song, but hey, I like that. And, Holger, thank you for dancing in my chat room. You are just absolutely fantastic in there, doing the worm and everything. Agador, Bigfoot, Drake's Drum, Eric Kyle, I have a guest here, Holger Awakens, Moving Forward, Paul Alexander, Vorpal Bite, and Sue from New Mexico. Thank you so very much for joining me tonight. Now, I'm going to switch gears because I'm down to about 20 minutes of talking points. I said I'm probably not going to do the entire 90 minutes tonight. But this is an interesting article, and this is out of the Telegraph. And this is courtesy of Tim Burton. Go figure. There's a politician in the UK that says that Britons should celebrate the fact that their country is a multicultural nation. And this is Michael Gove. He's the education secretary, and this is what he told the Asian Business Awards dinner. I put the link in the chat room for everybody. You know, he says, the answer to how we make our country strong in the future is that we welcome talent from whenever it comes, and we celebrate the fact that we are stronger together as a united kingdom, as a multicultural nation. And please click on the link and take a look at this guy because, oh my God, he is just so dreamy. And that running joke about dentistry in the UK, he epitomizes it. No offense to my UK listeners, but this guy looks like such a nerd. I'm just looking at him going, oh my. We should celebrate that we are a multicultural nation, says Michael Gove, education secretary. Britain should celebrate the fact that their country is a multicultural nation? My goodness. Like I say, the comments they have emerged after new research said that the Tories had to do more to attract black and ethnic minority voters if they wanted to win next year's general election. Oh, for goodness sake. Do you believe this? How do you spell pandering? Now, you know, his description of multiculturalism is often used by right-wing critics to criticize community groups who do not mix in with their neighbors. And, well, what? Okay. Right-wing critics who have a legitimate issue with, quote-unquote, community who do not mix in with their neighbors. Michael Gove is frustrating me. He told a 500-strong black tie dinner at a hotel in central London earlier this month that Britain was a stronger country because of its history of immigration. And, of course, this was written April 28th, so that would be earlier in April. He said, "The answer to our problems is not to denigrate success, but to celebrate it. The answer to our problems is not to chip away at wealth creators with new taxes and new burdens, but to do everything possible to liberate them, to create more jobs and opportunities for all." Well, you know what? Okay, because, and I want to thank Holger. Holger, thanks so very much. I'm going to see you at Reactionary's Place a little later. So thanks, Holger. Now, I have no problem with that. Wealth creation is good. Capitalism, good. Small government, good. But he blew it because he went on. "And the answer to how we make our country strong in the future is that we welcome talent from whenever it comes, and we celebrate the fact that we are stronger together as a United Kingdom, pardon me, as a multicultural nation than we could ever be if we looked back to the past." Now, what past would that be there, Mr. Gove? What past would that be? Now, it's interesting. Our little friend here, Mr. Gove, he is close to the Prime Minister, David Cameron. And they were backed by other senior Tories. Oh, look at one of them right here. Hang on. Here we go. Alec Sharma, MP, the Conservative Vice Chairman for Black and Minority Ethnic Issues, told the Daily Telegraph that people would regard to Mr. Gove's remarks positively. He said, "Britain is a multicultural nation, and many will regard Michael Gove's comments." Absolutely. "The vast majority of people from ethnic minorities regard a multicultural nation as one in which communities are integrated into the mainstream of British society and adhere to British values, whilst being able to respect their own cultural heritage." All right. You know what? How's that multiculturalism working out for you folks? How you liking that? We introduced official multiculturalism in Canada when we rewrote our Constitution in 1980. And enacted our Constitution in 1982. We enacted in that Constitution official multiculturalism, which means all cultures are equal. And we know that is the furthest thing from the truth. That is the furthest thing from the truth. I do not want to recognize all cultures as equal under my Constitution. That is just, that is cultural suicide, is what it is. Do you really think that female genital mutilation and honor killings are equal to the indigenous culture? What about getting up in the morning, going to work, a hard work, put in, coming home and taking care of your family, as opposed to going on the welfare rolls because you have three other wives who are technically single mothers that you have to take care of? Is that equal? No. What about your child gets a D in English. And so you sit them down, and the punishment is no TV for a week until you pull up your grades, as opposed to your daughter comes home, and she's dating a coffer, and you honor killer. But you know what? Hey, it's multiculturalism. All cultures are equal. And hey, we deal with these matters. These are family issues. Please. Official multiculturalism. What is this guy smoking? He did not learn from Canada nor the other, you know, countries that have embraced official multiculturalism. Michael Gove, you are such an idiot, and you look like one too. Like I say, click on this little honey. Like, take a look at this guy. You won't believe it. He is the absolute poster boy for derpy, derpy, derpity derp. God. Politicians. Oh, hey, guys, I just noticed. There is a poll you can take in here. Is multiculturalism a force for good in modern-day Britain? Oh, let's take a, you know, let's vote. What do you think? Ooh, the poll results are amazing. 97 votes for yes at 11.74%. 729 votes, 88.26% for no. Wow. 11% yes, 88% no. Now, why is it that when I come across these sort of stories, that people are overwhelmingly against the politician? And Agador, no, you don't have to sign up to take the poll. You can just go right there and click on it. Yeah, I don't take polls if I have to sign up. If they're, you know, it's a polls I can take. But, no, if I have to sign up to take a poll, I won't do it. But this one is an open poll. So, yep, you can click on it, yes or no. Getting back to this poll, though, okay? Research from Demos last week suggested that number of middle-class ethnic minority voters could help tip the election in favor of David Cameron. And here we go. This is what we call the voting bloc. What's Annie doing? Annie of Southern Sense, is conservative sense, is talking about ethnicity. I'm not going to tell you what she put in my chat room. Oh, Annie, you are bad. Okay. Oh, God. I've been totally thrown off, but she is so funny. And you have to listen to Annie. She's hilarious. Southern Sense is conservative sense, Tuesdays and Fridays. But multiculturalism is a very, very, very dangerous slope. Very dangerous. Because when we start pandering, we lose our identity. Isn't this amazing? Voters of minority status could help tip the election in favor of David Cameron. You know, there was a report by Trevor Phillips. He's a former head of the Equalities Watchdog, and one Richard Weber. He is a university professor of geography. And they concluded that upwardly mobile ethnic minority voters were more likely to turn conservatives. Oh, man. Jeez. You got to be kidding me. Wow. So this is how we're going to run things now, eh? going to rock and roll, is it? When it comes to our politicians and election mode, we're going to go with the ethnic vote. And we're going to push how damned great multi-foxing culturalism is. Oh, there is the study in this article that says the Labor risked losing some of its traditional support from Black and Asian voters as many moved to the suburbs. It suggested that second or third generation immigrants could lose their reflex support for Labor, and those moving to traditionally white middle class areas would be less likely to vote Labor. Oh, you know what, though? Don't vote Labor. Liberty GB, that's where you want to vote. That's where you want to cast your ballot. You want to cast it for Liberty GB in the EU elections on May 22nd. My UK listeners, I implore you, vote for Paul Weston and Safieri and Jack Buckby. That's where you want to go. I'm getting ready to wrap it up in a few moments. I'm going a little earlier than the 90 minutes that I do because, like I say, I have an animal on her big feather bed behind me, and I need to take care of her a little earlier than usual. But heed my words. Multiculturalism is not the route you want to go. And when you speak out against multiculturalism, are sunk in the polls. Is this where we want to go? Do we want voting blocks determining our governments? Do we want Blacks, Hispanics, Muslims determining our future for our children? Multiculturalism is the name for the condition in which antagonistic cultures coexist in the same country, and that is perfect. That is from David Green. He's from the right of center. Oh, here we go. The right of center. David Green is from the think tank Civitas, and he said Mr. Grove had confused multi-ethnicity with multiculturalism. David Green went on to say, Michael Gove has confused a multicultural society with multi-ethnic society. We have become a multi-ethnic society, but we have been successful because our dominant culture of freedom and democracy allows space for different lifestyles. David Green, I applaud you for that. I love what he says, though, and I'm going to reiterate that. Multiculturalism is the same for the condition in which antagonistic cultures coexist in the same country. And here's some money shot. Mr. Gove should have known from his experience of dealing with alleged sectarianism in Birmingham's schools that not all cultures are compatible with a free society. Birmingham schools, the Trojan horse. Everybody's familiar with the Trojan horse, the expose there that is going on in Birmingham, in which there was a document that was shared about the Islamic intended takeover of the public schools in Birmingham, UK. David Green, fantastic, and he's right. Why Mr. Gove, who is the education secretary, did not learn anything about the, and we do have to say alleged, because it's not been proven, but hopefully it will be down the road, has not learned from his experience of dealing with alleged sectarianism in Birmingham schools, that all cultures are not equal and not all cultures are compatible with a free society. Muslims who are are opposed to extreme interpretations of Islam will not thank him for confusing the issue. There is good diversity and bad diversity, as the people of Ukraine can testify. Sectarianism is diversity that threatens freedom, democracy, and toleration. Wow, that is so fantastic. Wow. I like this a lot, and I am giving this gentleman a round of applause. David Green, you nailed it. Now look at that. I actually did go to my 90-minute mark. Wow, I never shut the hell up, for Fox's sake. Okay. For Fox's sake, you still have to take a shot of whiskey. And what I expect everybody to do is get nicely loaded here. Take a shot every time I say, for Fox's sake. And let's all head over to Reactionary Speaks show. show up and get all groovy in his chat room. We'll be showing up at his place in about 15 minutes, and we'll all be, how you doing? I love you so much. And React would be going, oh, God, Kel's crew is over here. But for those of you who are fairly new to this program, this is of whom I refer. Hang on.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
Do I really look like a guy with a plan?
You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
I try to show the schemers how pathetic their attempts to control things really are.
The Reactionary Speak radio program.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos. I'm an agent of chaos. Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's beer.
Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, here on BTR.
So let's all go over to React's place, RC, and let's fill his chat room with a whole lot of drunken love tonight, because I want to thank Paul Alexander for helping me with the F-bomb show, and he did. It is, for Fox's sake, brighten up, politicians, brighten up, Islamists, for Fox's sake, brighten up the dimmies out there. You know, because for Fox's sake, we are running out of time. So, I really like that one. I just noticed, though, that there is somebody that just visited me in the chat room, and that is Jeff Mitchell of the English Defense League. And I am his producer on EDL Radio, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays, 3:30 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time. So I want to thank Jeff for being here. Of course, everybody's been wonderful. But I am out of time. I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank everybody who will listen and archive, because believe me, as Jeff and myself say over there at EDL Radio, you take time out of your otherwise busy day to spend with ours, and we appreciate every single moment of it. Be apprised, though. Like, please pay attention to all the radio shows that are out there. Tim Burton and myself will see you back here on RFB Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But we also do a show at the Radio Jihad Network at 6 p.m. Tuesdays. Seven shows, 7 days a week at the Radio Jihad Network. Listen to these programs. Listen to what everybody is conveying to you. It truly is mass Islamity, and we do have to stop the insanity. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you back here Monday, 3 p.m. Bye-bye.